Welcome to Stone Title, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Norm.
I'm Adam.
I'm Kate.
Kate Savaker, welcome.
Thank you.
We are able to get one more episode. And if you listen or watch last week's episode, we're literally recording like moments. We'll walk out the door. Sayonara.
A moment ago, we were like, see you, pal.
His Kate, seat was still warm. Here.
I know. Yeah.
We're peeling back the curtain.
And that's just because Will had a heart out, but also because this is our last day with you, Adam, essentially, for this year. You're traveling.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife and I are going on a Christmas trip starting early next week. Where we're going is my business. We're going to do this as a family trip. But yeah, today is crowded. We've just shot some of my favorite things for the year, and the reason Kate is here is because you're shooting your favorite things, and
yes.
We did a video. It's a shame we didn't cover this entire build, but we have a bunch of shots. We have
yes.
a ton of build photos of this incredible thing which you just completed.
Yes.
The blimp from Blade Runner.
A
nearly irreplicable. Is that a word? Irreplicable? A nearly irreplicable prop that we replicated with help from incredible model maker extraordinaire Jason Eaton. He put together this kit. I bought it from him a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and I were talking earlier this year, and I realized, Kate, do you want to put together the blimp?
I mean, you both had just finished the Star Child from
yes.
2001
yeah.
Space Odyssey. And you guys had so much fun, I could tell, working on that this... And I had seen this sitting on your shelf, Adam, for years. Daunting. Kind of yeah. taunting you.
Oh, super taunting. I mean,
yeah.
it is when you buy a kit like this, it is not like there's instructions of a tab A, slot B. I got a bunch of parts and a folder with like 400 photos
right.
in it. And then I added to that folder with screenshots and other things. And then, actually, there's an anonymous human... who reached out in the middle of this project and said, this is serious. I still don't know who this person is. They reached out in the middle of the project and said, I hear you're working on the Blade Runner blimp. Perhaps these photos will be of use to you. And they're incredibly high resolution ektachrome scans.
You had your own Deep Throat?
He literally called himself Deep Throat in the email.
Oh, wow.
And these photos are beyond amazing. I could. So it starts as a wide shot of the blimp. I could zoom in all the way to where I could see tiny handwriting on mm-hmm. the blimp. I could read. There were things that I couldn't see the logos on, and I could zoom in all the way.
It
I couldn't believe
so
the quality.
So many questions.
Yes,
for
and
us.
They became canon. That
yeah.
was if the other photos were unclear, if I had conflicting stories, these photos were the ones that were the answer.
And it's because there are hundreds of photos of the blimp online and of it being constructed, but it turns out there were multiple constructions of the blimp. There were teardowns and
yes.
rebuilds. So there's a lot of confusing information out there. A note, we shot this video untested, but it's worth talking about here. There are 24 antennas all the way around the perimeter of the Blade Runner blimp.
Now, when you say antenna, you're not talking about just a single
no,
wire.
No, I'm talking about these like little constructions of etched brass with lights at the end sticking out. And they're a key part of the crazy visual cacophony of the original blimp. We replicated every single blimp. I made a computer folder of pictures of each antenna. Every single one was numbered, or lettered, actually.
Yes.
And of all the reference photos that I had for the blimp, I then made sure, okay, we're going to letter starting A at the 1 o'clock position, going clockwise around from looking at the top. And then every single photo we had, we lined up, okay, this is A, B, C, this is N, P, Q, R, and we had files and folders
yeah.
of every single antenna.
We made our own catalog.
You replicate. And then we made a bin,
yep.
a foam core for each antenna.
Those bins were amazing. Because each antenna, it wasn't just like, oh, it uses this one piece. There were multiple components that you had to grab from different parts and gather them all together and then solder them. So these bins were immensely helpful because I could gather, okay, this part is in here and this part is in here, and slowly build them up before I sat down and then just... soldered for days on end.
Well, and so here's a question for you. I have found personally that when I'm building, I need printouts of the thing. It's great that I have a computer and I have all these files in the computer. How do you feel about working from a digital versus paper reference?
I am 100% a physical person. If it's not spread out in front of me, I not only need to have the one picture in front of me, I need to have all of the other pictures
yeah.
because I need to have a frame of reference at all times.
Yes.
Otherwise, there's something about my brain. I can't wrap my head around it unless I can see everything at once and know the context.
Well, so this is, I think, what makes you, I'm going to pay you a compliment. This is what makes you a wonderful model maker, is that you are always paying attention to that big picture while you're working on the small picture. And that's not easy to find in this industry. There's a lot of people who I've worked with who are excellent at one thing, and they don't care about the big picture at all. And that's fine. That's their prerogative. I prefer to know, and so do you.
Yes.
But I wonder what it is that makes me not happy looking at a computer screen when I'm trying to reference a model, that having a piece of paper for some reason just feels so much more immediate.
Well, you can literally get close to the paper. And
I have blown Photoshop files up and held calipers to the screen.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's the tangibility. The screen. Yes. Even though there is a screen, it is intangible.
And I am constantly making notes on things as I go. Yeah. So I like having that printout there that I can, you know, make notes as I go. I can say, oh, well, this is this size. Or I'm constantly, because of what I do is usually dealing with scale, mm-hmm. I need to check scale. So if I at least have that printout, I can say, okay, I can take measurements off of this, do the calculations, and convert that back to whatever else I need.
And there is, frankly, this is another one that I've come to really understand. There is nothing quite like having the printout at the correct scale.
Yes.
Nothing equates to that.
Oh, I love it. Yes.
Yeah. We just did a build of a sword scabbard, and I took some reference photos that I found online and blew it up to actual scale, and that made the work so much easier. By the way, a teaser note about that sword scabbard video. I discovered that I got a central thing about it wrong. And so I want to, in the new year, shoot a second one-day build where I tear this thing apart and put it back together correctly.
Let's do it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's just not quite accurate enough.
Yep. But there's nothing quite like the satisfaction of, after having done that, knowing, all right, now it can't get any better than it is now.
The thing was I was working off reference photos that were low res, and they were hiding a detail. And I got another reference photo that was higher res of just a small part of it, and made it really clear there's this super central detail that I forgot.
And you've already committed.
Yep.
In the actual wood. To the blimp, since Jason designed the kit, mm-hmm. and of course the original blimp 30-odd years ago is when it was made, what I loved about this one is that it has a lot of old technology.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't just like, because you're going to make it in 2018, let's get the newest electronics.
Right.
It really had a lot of...
Go ahead.
There's fiber optics all the way around, and you see all this color-changing light. And the fiber optics were clearly being activated by a light wheel, not by LEDs, because they didn't have them back then.
Well, exactly. And when I was working with our shop assistant, Mel, we were trying to troubleshoot, okay, how can we make this easier? How can we save space? You know, how do we get the color change to happen how we want? And, of course, Mel's answer was, oh, well, we'll just use LED strips in there. It'll save all this space. I can program it in the Arduino. And we ran it by you, and you're like, nope. Color wheel, fiber optics. And as much as it was like, oh, shoot, I'm really happy, because I had actually never fully worked with fiber optics before. So now I feel like I'm in there. I know what it can and can't do. Yeah. I know how the spacing works on the color wheel that you need to have in order to get the color change to happen at the rate you want.
Yeah.
It's really satisfying.
I love and it rattles. You can hear it. It's actually a really noisy part of the model. And
which
I find
I love.
It makes me very affectionate.
Oh,
feel very affectionate towards it.
I actually had these ornaments as a kid that you could plug into your Christmas lights on the tree.
Ooh.
And so it was like little elves that were hammering in their workshop.
Oh.
And the sound of that motor going was, because when I was a kid, I used to like to go lay by the Christmas tree at night and I'd fall asleep to it. And so the sound of a little motor whirring is just like, oh, something's working in there and I love it.
Well, and sorry, that's the other part of the two screens, the two advertising screens on the blimp. They are two auto-playing monitors, photo frames, and one of them plays a new life awaits you on the off-world colonies. But the other one just plays sort of ambient noise that the Asian woman saying what sounds like E.T. phone home.
It does sound like that.
E.T. phone home.
And then just blimp noises.
Yeah. And then, and also in the background of that other monitor is...
Yep.
That's the sound of the propellers or the rockets moving the blimp forward.
And occasional horns. They sound like, you know, train horns or something.
So the original blimp, it's a special effect, and it was filmed as a special effect. So what you see on screen, is that any of that composited?
I believe, knowing how they did Blade Runner. So the original blimp was built by Bill George, and other model makers at the time. Bill George, specifically, I'm mentioning because I worked for Bill George on episodes 1 and 2. He's an amazing effects director, an incredible model maker as well. He has all the chops. And weirdly enough, if you know Bill, you know that I'm telling the truth. Bill looks younger today than he does in photos of him working on Blade Runner, and I don't know how that works.
I need to meet him after studying all these reference photos and seeing him there. Now I need to see him in person.
He's got a painting in the attic. That's totally clear. But so the original blimp had practical lights on it. However, because of the way they shot Blade Runner, and the biggest scene you see the blimp in is, of course, when Deckard looks up at the end from the through the skylight of the Bradbury building in Los Angeles. The way they shot that scene, I think it might have actually... It was a stop-mo scene, but in order to look up through the skylight, they basically took a photo of the skylight and cut out every window panel of the photo. And then they shot the
through
blimp
the silhouette.
Through
that
the
so that the spotlights from it would actually be broken up by the lattice of the skylight. But again, it wasn't a single pass. So in Blade Runner, all of the effects in Blade Runner, there's pretty much no composites. It's all in camera. So they would run the blimp past the window for a single pass, which would probably be a rear light pass, then a front light pass.
So multiple exposures.
Pass. Yeah, multiple. Yes. Each time they're rewinding the film and re-exposing on the same piece of film. And this allows them to make sure that the lights are all balanced to each other.
Right.
And it means that I actually, you know, the fiber optics that go around the picture frames don't light up in person, and it's because they probably didn't on the real one.
Right.
They exposed for it on the real one. And then the actual advertising screens back in the late 70s, early 80s, they didn't have such a thing. So they were projecting that footage frame by frame on a reflective surface on the... This is my best guess. I haven't actually read the Cinefix article on Blade Runner in a long time. But probably frame by frame on it as it was going past. And
oh, you think it was like a stop sign, that perfect reflection?
It might have been 3M material. It might have just been a white card. Frankly, a good DP could work with either.
When you see the photos of the original model, you can tell that they actually have this really great fine mesh as your screen that's right on there. And I love that texture and that look.
That mesh is something that I want to have done in etched brass and put over ours. That's the last finishing touch to make our screen look more pixelated.
Yes, I think that'll look really good. It'll add this like warmth and this grit to it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, not a thing I ever thought I would have in my house. I really just thought, when I first saw the kit, I was like, oh, this is going to take, when am I going to have, I thought to myself, when am I going to have 2 or 3 months to work on this? And the answer is not soon, but luckily enough, you did. And the work you did on it, I loved when I went in and found you on the first day you were weathering after all of the preliminary work. It was like 2 months of labor and then a month of painting.
Yes, yes. And that was honestly what I was looking forward to the entire time. I was like, I just need to get it all together so I can paint it, so I can put the ads on, so I can weather it, and it'll look like I need it to. And also because you get to a point on models sometimes when you're so deep in it that maybe a month goes by and it doesn't actually look different.
Like you've made any progress.
You're doing so much, especially on something with internal and the lighting and the wiring, and you just feel like you're in this slog. But once you get to that weathering and the painting pass, it changes miles. People who had seen this blimp every single day would suddenly come in and go, oh, that looks really good. I'm like, all I needed was some oil washes and some powder weathering pigments, and oh, it was great.
Sorry,
since it's been, you know, tentatively completed, because I know you guys are going to continue some work on it. Mm-hmm. You've been doing improvements. Like every time we stop by the cave, there's like, check out this thing you've done to it. Check out this thing.
And I went through many iterations of how to display it.
Mm.
At first, I thought that it might sail around the pool table, and I built this whole idea in my head of a oval track around the pool table, so the blimp would go and you could turn it on. And then once it was done, it was so singularly beautiful that I didn't want to add an extra show to it. I wanted it to be something that you could just really grok and see. And so I bought on eBay a chunk of 1.25-inch thick steel plate, plasma cut out of a piece of trench plate. And I could tell that it's trench plate because I ground a bunch of asphalt off the top of it.
Wow.
So that weighed like 18 or 20 pounds. And so that's, it's a nice small base that will hold this thing really rigidly. But then as we were looking at it on that base, we realized you want to look at both sides of it. So this past Saturday, I came in and I hacked apart a vacuum cleaner's retractable plug and used the brass slip rings, and I machined them into a set of poplar boards that I machined into round that perfectly matched the circumference of the steel plate, so that basically it's a long way of saying now you plug it in with a single plug and you can spin it 360 all you want and it stays powered.
And that's what's great too, is because there are so many angles to it, is it would be a shame if it was, you know, positioned in one place and you couldn't see the backside or you couldn't see here or there. So it's nice to be able to get a full view.
That's where you find a high voltage slip ring.
Yeah, you have to make your own. I keep Rockler makes some beautiful heavy duty bearings, every size from like 6 inches up to 24 inches. One of them's in the neck of my R2-D2, but they're very, very rigid. And as long as you engineer them correctly, they can be a really, really robust Lazy Susan with a big fat hole in the middle. So this thing doesn't rock or rattle or anything. Yeah, no, it's always an ongoing process to figure out how to once it's done, you want to see it. And I was surprised how disappointing it was for us when it was first completed on the table, that it was hard to turn it around.
Right.
And that drove me. So this weekend, Mel was in the shop doing some final programming on it. And while Mel was here, I was like, I'm going to make this slip ring.
I mean, because it has lights and sounds too. It's spatial.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole experience. It's coming home. This one gets curated into my home office. It's so beautiful. And also, I mean, honestly, if it was here in the cave, it would get torn to shreds.
It is
such a delicate model.
It's very delicate.
I'm not even sure how I'm going to transfer it the few blocks from here to home.
I was gonna say, not on your one wheel, right?
No, but I'm not sure I can get in a car with it.
Oh, right, because it is quite tall as well.
I might have to just physically walk it home.
Oh, gosh. Wow. With a ring of protection around
you. Right. What are you going to do? I can't even cover with a sheet. It's too delicate.
I was going to say, get a pickup truck. I will sit in the bed of the pickup truck holding it on for dear life, and you drive very slowly.
Yeah. That's an open question. Maybe we'll film that.
Yeah.
It's definitely not coming home until after the
holidays.
Yeah.
I love that you two have both fulfilled the promise of podcasting, which is the paint a word picture. So tantalizing that only in the imaginations of listeners
we'll
out there.
Include a picture with this.
Yes.
It'll tease the video.
Hey, everybody. Norm here. And before we continue with this week's episode, I want to thank the sponsor that makes it possible, and that's OpsGenie by Atlassian. Because incidents happen, and they require complex coordination between operations and software development teams who are putting out fires every day. That's why getting alerts immediately is critical. Thankfully, there's OpsGenie by Atlassian. OpsGenie empowers dev and ops teams to plan for service disruptions and stay in control during incidents. It also gives teams the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues, and helps notify all the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that account for things like time zones and holidays. Better yet, OpsGenie allows for deep flexibility in how, when, and where alerts are deployed, with over 200 integrations like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. Plus, it tracks all activity and provides useful insights to improve future incident responses. It's services like OpsGenie that allow the other services that you rely on and you use so frequently, especially during this holiday season, to stay up and running without service interruptions, because those engineers are on it. With OpsGenie, your next incident doesn't stand a chance. Visit OpsGenie.com to sign up for a free company account and add up to 5 team members. That's OpsGenie.com. Never miss a critical alert again with OpsGenie. Now back to the conversation.
Norm, what are you doing for the holidays?
I'm staying at home raising a child.
Yes, right. You've got a new poop
Christmas.
Producer in the house.
Yeah. So trees up. It's going to be low-key. I'm happy to take the break and watch the Netflix and take it easy. But because it's been a long year. And because this is, I think, our last podcast with you this year, Adam, one of the things I want to do is kind of look back at 2018, because you had a busy year too.
Yes.
You filmed the TV show.
We filmed Mythbusters Jr. over the summer. We got into pre-production on a new TV show for Science Channel.
Mm-hmm. And
in addition, we flew to New Zealand a couple of times.
Twice this year.
Year.
You made a short film
with the folks from Weta and Peter Jackson and Richard Taylor.
Yep. And then went back to chat with Peter Jackson about Mortal Engines. It's, I mean, like, I don't think, because I think I'm putting you in the spot a little bit, but like going back, I think if we look at photos of the cave at the beginning of the year, like these spacesuits weren't here.
No. Right? It became a much, so I knew this at the beginning of 18, that spacesuits were going to become more prominent. Because we're entering 2019, the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, NASA's very near and dear to my heart. First Man came out this year. Ryan Nagata and his incredible work are showcased in that film, as well as Chris Gilman from Global Effects, and I have some of their pieces here. We also went to three cons. We did Silicon Valley Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con, and New York Comic Con. All three really unique cons with different cultures. It's been a terrific, from a tested standpoint, it has been a terrific year. On the politics front, it's been an absolute shit show. Which is stressful for everyone. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, it's been a stressful year for us.
Yes.
But the making aspect of you know, reaching out, encouraging people to make, has felt really like it's been a great saturated year for that.
And meeting new people,
mm-hmm.
and you know, building that community of people that you can reach out to and collaborate with.
Nation of Makers had held their first conference, NomCon, in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I took the train with a bunch of my board members and friends down there. Jen Schachter supervised with We the Builders, an incredible 6-foot-tall Rosie the Riveter made of 1,800 parts from 700 makerspaces around the world. Jen and I are going to be doing more collaboration in the future on Tested and on other projects. The family gets bigger.
Yeah.
That's the lovely thing about this is Tested. It feels like a family, and the family just keeps expanding in a tangible and manageable way that feels really lovely.
Yeah.
Also, there's been Savage Industries, my bag company with Mafia. We've sold thousands of pieces to people. I can't describe how intoxicating it is to make things that people use.
I have stickers on everything that say Savage Industries now.
I believe one's on the blimp as well.
Yes, there are two on the blimp.
I gave a whole bunch to Jack White's crew when he came and visited the cave, and I still get emails or texts from them as they travel around the world. Because what I like to do is take a Savage Industries sticker and I put it on the back of every hotel television that I encounter.
Fits very
I want someone to at some point come to me and go, dude, did you used to make televisions? And I would go, yes, I did.
Or just like do a double take. Yeah, I've seen that somewhere, but I don't know exactly.
What is that?
Exactly where.
The trick is to put it on so it looks like a manufacturer's label.
Mm.
Kate, what are you doing for the holidays?
I go to LA every year for about a week before Christmas because I used to live in LA. All my friends are there. I have quite a lot of family there. And my birthday is 3 days before Christmas.
Oh.
So I try to separate birthday and Christmas. So I go.
You've suffered your whole life on that one.
I have. It's
buy Kate two presents. Don't be a cheapskate.
And don't go out of town until the 23rd because it's really hard to hang out with people. Like, I'm going to get together for my birthday. And everybody's like, I'm on the East Coast. I'm here.
Right.
So I go down for a week. That way I can see all my friends without rushing. I can go to all of my favorite restaurants instead of picking, you know, just two.
Lovely.
For a weekend. And it's nice to split that up. Then I come home. Then I go see my family in Sacramento.
Lovely. Lovely.
Yeah.
Which is still standing, luckily, despite the best efforts of nature and global warming.
Yes, exactly. I think the levee breaking was an issue at one point. The fires have been pounding them, but still there.
And quite a big year for you too, Kate. Like a lot of first conventions for you?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I went to at least 5 conventions this year, all my firsts.
Amazing.
I had never been to any Comic-Cons before. It was nice starting out. I eased my way in with Silicon Valley.
A gentle con, if there ever was one.
And then I think I did Maker Faire after that, Monster Palooza after that. Then San Diego Comic-Con was a big shock. And then I even got to go to New York Comic-Con as well. So I got to go all over the place and really get immersed in it. And being there with you guys was a great introduction. I mean, there's no better way.
No, it feels like our family. And each one feels like different aspects of our family. And we have relationships with the folks behind the scenes and in front of the cameras. I've been going to cons now for 11 or 12 years. And in the last couple, it has started to feel just like family reunions at each one.
Yeah. It doesn't even matter that you're not at the panels. You're not seeing all the things on the floor that you want to see as long as you see the people.
Yeah. Yeah. There are great ways to get together with the people that I love.
Yeah. You know, we're recording this a week before you're actually listening to this, but as you're listening to this right now, we actually have some members of the Tested family in office. Bill Duran's coming. I think he might actually already have been here, but he's coming by the studio, do some projects with us. And then Daryl Maloney is going to be in the shop, in this shop, the whole week. You know, I'll be doing some builds with him on Twitch.
Can't wait to see what Daryl builds. That's it's awesome. Going to be so awesome.
I haven't seen him since Comic-Con either. I love that guy.
And so that's kind of how things go every year to year, right? Every year, meeting new people, expanding the family, you know, going to new cons and having new experiences. And
continuing to spread the joy of making, really.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that is the central ethos of this family is, you know, reach out and make something. It improves something for you. It improves the world around you. It is de facto, you are improving the world. And that is a skill that you can work like an exercise, even if you don't think that you can draw or that you can build stuff. We're here to tell you that we feel stupid all the time.
All the time.
All the time. We are vexed and concerned by the things that we built, but we are also enriched by them and enriched by the people that we learn from and collaborate with.
Yes. So this was my first real year with Tested, and I was really surprised by how many people have reached out to me from the internet, either through Instagram or through my website, saying, I saw a video of you on Tested. I am just getting into, you know, puppet making or airbrushing or doing this for the first time. Can you offer any advice? And it's been great to be able to help any way I can. I mean, obviously, there are things that people ask me that I don't know, but I can say, hold on, I know how to get you in touch with somebody who does know. And that is just so satisfying.
It really is. I agree.
Yeah, so share what you've made this year. We'd
love
to see.
Share what you've made. Yeah, we love seeing that. We love putting together those galleries of things. We love highlighting wonderful makers. I love my Twitter feed. Whenever I post something like about Machination Studios or some of those guys, I get extra tweets from people going, do you know about these guys? You know about these guys? You know about this person? And it's just the best.
Yeah. Well, and hearing from, I know that we've done a few garage kit builds this year, and hearing about the plight of some of them, the guys who make them, who a lot of people are making copies,
recasting,
and this is their livelihood. So it's been really nice to be able to buy the kit straight from these guys, put them together, showcase it, and help them get some more business as well.
Absolutely. There's some beautiful things being made out there by people who are only making 20 or 30 of something.
Yes.
You can find them often on their own websites or on their Facebook pages or on Etsy. And when you find one, you often find a gateway into many others.
You fall into a click hole, definitely.
Absolutely. And that's a delightful place to go.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of, you know, I've talked about this a lot, but as 3D printing and rapid prototyping stuff becomes more online, it becomes more like rapid manufacturing, and we get more and more beautiful things being made by people that they can make them in small editions and satisfy tiny little niche markets. And we are nothing if not a collection of niche markets in this place.
Definitely.
It's a wonderful way to end.
I think
year.
So.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening this year. That might be it for Still Entitled until the new year.
We'll be back in the first week in January.
Yes. And thank you, Kate, for joining us this week.
Thanks
for having
me.
Thank you for all the joining that you've done on the podcast this year. Happy holidays. Happy Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever holiday you feel like celebrating. Happy New Year. It'll be really nice to put a period on the end of 2018. It has been an intense and awesome year, both at the same time.
Yes.
We'll see you in 2019.
See you in 2019. Bye, guys.